Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish the book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy and agree with me or disagree with me or whatever you want. That's great. So if you do agree with any of my reviews or have reading advice from me or book recommendations or anything that way like that, you can get in contact with me in various different ways. Luke@juggler.net is the easiest way to get in contact with me by email, and also you can do it via goodreads.com, and my username on there is Luke Burridge, and you can become my friend, and that's really great. So I'm going to move straight on to today's review, and I have some notes here, and I've got the Wikipedia page up here, which is also, well, not the Wikipedia page, the goodreads.com page, which is going to be coming very handy here, because the book that I'm going to be reviewing is called Shards of Honor by Louis McMaster Bujold, and this is the again, it's a weird way to look at this, but in publication order and the writing order, this is actually the first book in the Vorkosigan saga. However, I've decided that I wasn't going to read these books in publication order. I would read them in internal chronological order. And again, people will email me and say, "No, you're reading it the wrong way. You should read it in the publication order." But I just picked one, and this is the way that I'm doing it. I'm listening to them as audiobooks via Audible. There's really great narration by Grover Gardner, and these are also really quite short books as well. I got through the whole book, like it's about 8.5 or 9 hours worth of audiobook listening there. It says here on the Goodreads page, 272 pages. So that's pretty good. You know, quite short books, you can get through these. And I've decided to check out this series because it is literally the most recommended series of books so far on the podcast that I had not yet got to. I started in on this, and this is the second one. The one after this is after Shards of Honor is Barrier, I guess so, which apparently is like a continuation of this story. It picked up pretty soon after this and was actually written at the same time or together, and then were kind of split apart and published like years apart, even though the full story was there in Bujold's notebook or whatever it was there. Maybe it was already written or something like that, and these two stories, actually this one and the next one in the series, have actually been collected together into a single book, and you can get them both, not Shards of Honor and Barrier, but they're collected together into, and now I can't find it. I had it here right in these notes, or is it on Wikipedia? Maybe that was on the Wikipedia page. Cordelia's Honor. So if you might have read these two stories, this one and the next one, which wasn't published next, but is next chronologically, internal chronologically, together as a single book, even though I think even then they're still two separate stories within that book. It's like an omnibus version. So let's get onto the world of this. This is kind of in many ways, the world is quite a generic space opera, kind of military science fiction kind of thing. You've got empires and fleets. I went over this before when I reviewed the novel Falling Free, but again, to kind of to set up a similar kind of political systems that you can't just have spaceships going anywhere, and you have to have these choke points, you have to have these control points. Again, when you're looking at the world map, you see these choke points are going through, you know, the Straits of Gibraltar and the Panama Canal and the Suez Canal, whoever controls these different choke points around the world for shipping. Back in the days when empires revolved around who had the biggest fleet and who had the most ships and trade and all that kind of stuff, those would decide who was the most powerful if you had these different bits of territory surrounding choke points. And it's the same here. You've got wormholes, and if you control the area around different wormholes, it means you can tax the trade that goes through them and control the wormhole openings or something like that that go between one or the other. Now, I wasn't quite sure if these wormholes were man-made or if they were you had to find them, they were discovered or something like that. That's not really clear. Actually, the whole kind of space opera-y kind of technological side of things in this book, not really well explained in this, well, not so much not well explained, but not really important for the story. It's literally, it's just go, okay, we've got this empire, and there's this other empire over there, and this other empire has got this expansionist faction, and they want to go out, and they want to, take over this wormhole area, and this other people want to stop it and stuff. Unlike However, unlike the another Honor, this is Shards of Honor, but then there's the Honor Harrington book on Basilisk Station that I reviewed and was very, very disappointed by, because in there it seemed to be that all of the rules of the world were set so that the spaceships are specially designed that they can do, you know, exactly the same tactics as the other ships in space, to the point where, like, there's strips down the side where the guns point out, and then a bit at the front where the gun points out. Anyway, what it's like to try and sail and do these same spaceship kind of battles between two fleets, like here comes the Spanish Armada and here's the Battle of, you know, Trafalgar or something like that. Now we're going to just replay it in space, and all the rules are tweaked to make that possible. Here, it doesn't seem to be that much to do with that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, there are some rules, but it doesn't matter because we're actually going to get on and tell a story. These space battles, which I'll get onto later on, aren't just, okay, this is now going to be a space battle, which is a retelling of a previous British Empire or, you know, Britain versus France kind of thing. There's other... that never seems to be even remotely the main focus, to the point where, like, new technology is sometimes introduced and you're like, oh wait, oh okay, well that swings that, oh okay, and the some of the battles can be over pretty quickly or not even a battle occur at all, which is good in a way, because again, as you'll see as we go on with this podcast, you'll realize that that's not actually what this book is about. But yeah, you've got like these three main kind of powers, like these empires, like space empires, which each cover a few planets. I'm guessing a few planets. You've got Barriar, which is like the in a way like the bad guys in this story, and then you've got Beta Colony, which is where our main character comes from, Cordelia Naismith. She's a captain in a survey ship at the beginning of the book, there, and then you've got Escobar, which is like a third empire or a third planet, which is kind of like I say it's a third one. Barriar goes to war with Escobar. Let me put it that way. Mild spoiler, not really a spoiler, because this is like a military science fiction book in that way, and it's space operas. You're gonna have two things going to war, and Beta Colony come to the aid of Escobar. They become allies in a way against Barriar, but sort of not so much sort of like a straight allies. It's not as if like Beta Colony decided to declare war on Barriar. It's more of like, oh, we're gonna help you out over there, we're gonna, you know, send you people, we're gonna send you ships if you need, in that kind of way, rather than like direct military help in the way you'd expect. So there's these various, you know, different technological levels. You got the idea that Beta Colony is, you know, it doesn't really need to get too involved because it obviously has the higher technology, and Escobar needs technological help, and Barriar seems to be a little bit behind, but they're very, you know, like say you got this expansionist faction, they're like a warrior society, to the point where there's like a warrior caste, and if you have Vor in front of your second name, which obviously comes from Vor Kosigan, that Vor is like a hereditary title, which means that in a previous, like, your, you know, many, many ancestors ago, or maybe just more recently, one of your ancestors was a very great battle, or, you know, warrior, or he led a ship, or led a fleet, or did something heroic, and he got like a count, he became a count or a lord or something, and that's what the Vor stands for. It's like the aristocracy there, but it's based around previous battle victories, if this previous person was a leader in the army or something like that. Anyway, so yeah, like I say, space empires, spaceships and stuff, what are you gonna get? Like, but this is the kind of thing I'm expecting this whole series to be, you know, this military science fiction. In fact, to be honest, when I started this series, I presumed it would be something like Starship Mutiny or On Basilisk Station, two stories which, you know, as I started, I just thought were absolutely pathetic, both of them. And I was really hoping that it wouldn't be that bad, and was pleasantly surprised with Falling Free. But Falling Free wasn't really like the military science fiction with fleets and space battles that I was expecting. Instead, what I got was like this, as I explained it, it wasn't only episodes ago, you probably remember listening to that, like, it was a fun, nostalgic book, you know, more in the style of a Heinlein juvenile juvenile in many ways, and there wasn't space battles, and there were some battles, and there was fighting, you know, but it was more of a freedom fighting, and I don't think anybody died, and there wasn't much, well, not much death anyway. And there were some fun characters. It was like, you know, I mentioned it was a bit like The Moon is a Harsh Mistress with some technicians and stuff, like leading a rebellion. And other people said, hey, it was a bit more like Little Fuzzy, yeah, and that was very much like Little Fuzzy as well, because you've got these people, the quaddies, the people with their feet where, no, not feet, they don't have feet, they have hands where the feet are meant to be, and it's all this, oh, well, these are just slaves, they're genetically engineered humans, and they don't really have any rights, or do they have rights, or are they humans, are they sentient, or whatever, that kind of stuff. You've got that whole thing going on there too. And another thing, which is quite important, which I thought was a point against the book, one of my main points against the book, was the relationships between the characters, most specifically this very silly love subplot between this middle-aged welding technician and a 17-year-old, you know, four-handed, sexy, silver-haired, yes, babe. I guess, I'm not sure, because she was much more than that in the book, but there was quite, you know, silly love plots going on, and I was thinking, it's not really what I was expecting from the, not really what I wanted from the book. Well, it's not that I didn't want it, I just thought it was a weaker part of the book. So, then, I turned to Shard of Honor, the first book that was written in this series, and written earlier than Falling Free, for sure. And then I was thinking, well, surely there's going to be space battles in this one, because this is the one that started it all off, and this is what people, you know, recommend when they actually recommend this series. They say either start here or start with The Warrior's Apprentice, which is the introduction of the Miles Vorkosigan character, who I've still not got to yet, because I'm reading this chronologically. And I thought, well, I'm probably going to get the space battles, and I'm probably going to get more silly space romance between, you know, characters in space, because I'd heard this is actually about the parents of Miles Vorkosigan. It's how his parents met or how they got together. So I was expecting, you know, some kind of like a silly adventure, and by the end of it, these quirky couple would, you know, like a romantic comedy. They're going to hate each other at the start. And quite, when I first started reading it, I was like, oh, well, Cordelia's from one side in this battle, and Vorkosigan is going to be the father, and so he's from the other side, and it's going to be this mismatched couple, and by the end of it, they'll, you know, in the last few pages, they'll go, oh, and we actually, you know, that's the kind of thing that I was expecting when I first started reading this, when I was like, you know, 10 pages in, although I listened to it as an audiobook, so when I was about, you know, 15 minutes into this book, that's what I thought I was going to get. But actually, I was yet again surprised when, like I say, when I read Falling Free, I was expecting one thing and got something totally different. And then when I started listening to this as the audiobook, I was expecting one thing, this silly love story, this silly space romance. And actually, it was a way more mature look at, you know, a courtship between two, like, middle-aged, mature adults. And it's quite refreshing to have that kind of view of romance in the science fiction, and that is really the main focus, that's the main thread that runs throughout the different stages in this book. Cordelia Naismith, she's a captain of this survey mission, and at the beginning they're on a planet, and her survey team down on the planet, oh no, she's down on the planet going off up a mountain with an ensign. And then the camp is attacked by some people from Barrier, some troops from Barrier, and her ship and all the people, they kind of escape, and they get away, and she's like, yes, keep going, your ship is much faster than them, so you just go back home to Beta Colony and tell them what happened here, that this planet has been attacked, our survey mission here has been attacked. And one of the people, and then she gets back to the camp, and stuff happens, and she meets up with one of the Barrier soldiers called Errol Vorkosigan, and he's a Vor, so he's one of these kind of aristocratic military caste kind of people, or is it caste? Yeah, I guess class or caste. Not sure which way around it works in that way. And then they're kind of forced to work together, and I thought, and so it begins. But it turns out that storyline of them on this planet together and traveling to this, you know, this supply dump that they need to go to, and there's going to be stuff there, and they can, you know, can get a radio there and be able to call out or whatever's needed. and they have to go across this this whole planet together. I was thinking, oh, okay, well, this is the start of it, but it wasn't. There was no, you know, there was no outrageous flirting. There was no, you know, sexy fun times or anything like that. And in fact, throughout the whole book, not really any sexy fun times between these two main characters. But there is pretty quickly an immediate strong connection. And again, I don't want to give it too much away because one of the delights of this book is reading, like, again, I'll go on to this a lot more in a bit, but is reading about the different things that these two characters do. And it's one of those perfect examples of a book where, you know, the old rule of writing is like, show, don't tell. And there is a lot of telling in this book. These characters are saying, well, I did this, and they're kind of telling each other about each other, or they're, you know, or we're just told, okay, and then this happened, and that happened, and this happened. There is a bit of telling in that way, but it's always kind of like an angle to what's actually going on. For example, in this attack, someone has died, and Cordelia is like, okay, I need to bury this guy, and I'm going to dig this grave. And just the way that it plays out between them, of Cordelia saying, I want to dig this grave, and Vorkosigan saying, no, I don't think you should dig the grave. We got to get it moving, because otherwise we're going to be here all night. And the way that plays out, I think, is actually really interesting. It says so much about the individual characters in a way that they could have just said, and he was a strong character who wanted to look after this person, and she was a strong character because she, you know, had respect for the dead because she wanted to bury this person. And the ensign who goes along with them, again, I don't want to give it too much away there, but like, and again, I'll get into that more, I'll talk about that more later on, about this ensign character at the beginning. You just think, okay, well, what are they going to do with this guy? Well, actually, I'll just mention it now. So what happens is that he gets hit by a neural disruptor, or something like that. I can't remember the exact technical terms, but it means he's kind of rendered, not into like a vegetative state, but he loses a lot of brain capacity and can't really control his body properly, and they have to nurse him kind of back to health, and also walk 500 kilometers or 200 kilometers, or, you know, walk for a week back across this planet looking after him all the way. And yeah, just the way that the two characters deal with this. Of course, Vorkosigan is immediately going, well, if ever I get hit by a neural disruptor that way, and I'm, you know, my memory is wiped and my brain is wiped, and I can't even tie my own shoelaces, and you can't feed me, just take my knife and slit my neck, or stab me in the back, or something. That's what I would like. And again, you read that and you just think, oh, okay, he's cold and, you know, heartless, and he, you know, he wants to just kill this guy and just to get it over with, because, you know, you're not quite sure how he's going to live out the rest of his life. Is he going to have been nursed for the rest of his life? Maybe he'll die in a few months' time in agony. But again, I don't want to give too much away, but how that plays out. What do I have a note here about Tilting the Balance, which is the last book that I reviewed? Oh yeah, in there, it's sort of like, and now a sex scene, just for sexy fun times, just because we're going to have it. That's a note to say that that doesn't really happen in this book. But it's a story about this connection between these two characters. It happens in three parts. So the first part is they're on this planet, and they've got to get there. And of course, Vorkosigan, it's a story about how he's been double-crossed, and he needs to get back in control of his ship, because there's been a mutiny, and then there's a mutiny against the mutineers, and then there's a mutiny, you know, there's like these different levels of mutiny going on, where he's trying to capture the ship back, and then it gets captured from him, and then goes back on. And that's quite fun. And in the end of that, Cordelia gets away, and then the narrative skips forward a while, and the space battles begin. But Cordelia gets captured by one of the main villains in this story, and it gets onto some, you know, this brings the two characters closer together again, because Cordelia comes back into like the barrier circle of, you know, power, and onto their ships as a captive. And it gets into a little bit of like, you know, the Gap series, like Real Story by Steve L. Donaldson. There's a little bit of that going on. It's sort of like, okay, there's going to be some rapey action here. Again, I don't want to give away too much, but of course she gets out of that and meets up with Miles Vorkosigan again, and stuff happens, and there's huge, you know, military space battles, actually, that we don't see. And again, that's another thing. We can just hear reports about this, and you think, well, like, don't just tell us that there's been this big military victory or defeat. Don't want to give too much away here. But, like, we just heard some reports about it, and then you realize that there's a story going on with the love story between Cordelia Naismith and Alvor Kosigan, and at the same time there's this other story going on, which is space battles, and then on top of all of that there's another whole story going on, another level of story going on top of all of that. And then you'd think, well, you know, I was getting to, this is like maybe, 5 hours or 6 hours into this 8.5 hour audio book. And it's like, well, that's it. The big space battle has happened. This is where it all ends. Yeah, of course. Because, you know, he should just get the girl and they should be together. And that's what they both want. And of course, circumstances are coming between them in a way, you know, in a kind of like a regency kind of romance drama kind of thing. And you think, well, this will be it. And they're going to do this. But then where a normal, military science fiction book would end, you then get like the aftermath of this big science fictiony space opera military battle with fleets and stuff going space, and then it actually turned into one of my, not my, I wouldn't say my favorite part of the book, but the book takes a turn which for me was totally unexpected, and I thought, oh well, okay, then we're gonna have to ramp it up again, and we're gonna have to have civil war back in Barrio, whatever's gonna happen, and we're gonna have to turn the level up of the space battles even higher, and we're gonna have to really go for it now. But instead, we just get the aftermath of what has come before, and the aftermath is like just a way of bringing more barriers between Cordelia and Vor Kosigan. And you get this actually quite an interesting little kind of, oh, so wait a second, so she was a captive for the barrier, so she has like the Stockholm syndrome, but she's denying it, or maybe they've suppressed her memories because there's some like kind of memory suppression technology. But then, of course, there's these three parts to the story. There's them meeting each other, and then there's the development of the relationship between them, even though, you know, they haven't, you know, they don't touch each other, haven't kissed. It's all just like them getting to know each other, rather than just going, oh, now we'll kiss. Oh, I love you. I can't live without you. All that kind of stuff. And then you get all of the aftermath, and that's when they kind of realize all the barriers that are between each other. And one of them decides that she has to, Cordelia decides that she has to get rid of some of these barriers, which are standing between her and what she actually wants, and goes about it, she gets the guy in the end, or the guy gets the girl in the end. There's a lot more going on. Like I say, there's these other, three different plot lines which come together in the final section of the book. But that's not the final section. But there's still half an hour of this audiobook to go. What goes on here? Maybe 45 minutes of this audiobook. What else can happen here in this epilogue in chapter 16? And then it just switches, like, out of nowhere to another character, and you're just like, oh, okay, this other character's doing this other thing after this other battle. They're out, actually, these two characters in the ship, which are going out picking up dead bodies that are floating in space after this battle. It's like, okay, we've got like 287 bodies floating in this volume of space somewhere. We're going to set out the radar and go around and scan this until we've picked up all of the bodies that we can find, which may be still floating in space. Dead bodies, but, you know, we got to go and pick them up. And it was really weird because this is like a little, it's like an epilogue, but also a little recap, because there's these two characters on there, and it's not a romantic relationship that they have, but their relationship develops over time, and it's like a little replay. Well, not even a replay, or it's not even a recap, but it's like a little warped mirror held up to the relationship that we've just seen developed. It's like, you're terrible. No way, actually. Oh, do you need some help over there? Can I join you over there? And maybe you come over here and I'll work out. Again, I don't want to just give it all away. I actually really liked the epilogue. I think it would have worked really well as a short story. I don't think it was actually needed in this book, no matter how much I like it. I think it just kind of slowed down the end of the book. You're like, well, that as a little short story could have really worked, or might have really worked. But it felt like it was kind of like, Bajold had this little story idea, and she was like, oh, that's not really enough for a short story, because I'd have to explain what the battle was and all this going on, and it's really thematically linked to this, but it's got these other ideas which I couldn't really shoehorn into this other part. I mean, if she had put these same ideas into the main plot line, it would have felt more shoehorned in, but the epilogue did feel just like it was dangling off the edge there, even though I thought it was a really touching end to the book. Overall, I thought the story was very good. There's some really great twists, and like I say, the peeling away of the layers of conspiracy I thought was very interesting, and the little clues that are dropped throughout the book. I could kind of see it coming in one way, but I didn't realize it. I didn't realize how much Vorkosigan knew, because you never really see stuff from his point of view. The problem... Oh, and also, there's a note here. Shit hits the fan quite often. I really like it, how people use their ingenuity to get through, which is really great. But sometimes it felt a little bit too much like Cordelia had this... She had this superpower. She had magical persuasiveness. That, like, when she was in a situation and there was someone there, she could go, Hey, how about you don't do what your orders are and do what's best for everyone instead? And these characters, maybe she's just a good judge of character where she can go, hey, psst, piss, psst, hey, help me, don't help those other guys. They're actually bad guys and I'm a good guy. And if you really, well, actually I'm not, but Miles Vorkosigan is, you should help him. Hey, help him. And I know that the whole idea of this book is about honor, and that she has honor, and Vorkosigan has honor, and it's about, you know, how there's this actually quite heavy-handed bit near the end of the book where it's sort of like, okay, there's rock, paper, and scissors, and, you know, rock gets wrapped by paper and all this kind of stuff, and it seems like her superpower is like this fourth thing in the rock, paper, scissors battle, which is like, actually, this thing, fire, no, what would it be? I don't even know what it could be. Yeah, it's all like, dynamite blows up rock, dynamite blows up paper, dynamite blows up scissors, haha, I have dynamite. And it's like, what is that? Is that your honor? It's like, yeah, well, it kind of helps. It means that if you show honor to other people, they'll be honorable back or something. But it did seem a little bit too handy. I mean, it was good. I'm not complaining. Each individual time, it kind of made sense and was logical, but it did seem a little bit too handy that she had this superpower. What else have I got here? Science and technology. Yeah, wormholes, need controlling. I mentioned that before. And also, I really liked it, and I think I mentioned this before, is that I don't... Like, military technology in the Empire, as I mentioned this in the last podcast that I did as well with the World War, like, to make an interesting battle sequence, you've got to have two enemies or two sides of a fight, which are pretty well matched up. I was just flicking through ESPN and there was a boxing round and it just started. And I was like, oh, I'll just watch this. And it was over within 20 seconds. I was like, wow, that's really disappointing, because one guy was obviously superior to the other. And if you're superior to the other person, you will just win. I mean, there's no way. If one side is even remotely, you know, above the power of the other one, or above the capabilities of the other one. And I was just in Peru as well, juggling with some jugglers there. And there's a juggling game called Combat. And it turns out that if you live in Berlin, you get very good at combat very quickly, to the point where the Berlin jugglers are pretty much the best combat players in the world. And I am a Berlin juggler, so it turns out that, like, whenever I go and visit anywhere around the world and they're like, hey, let's play combat, it's like, okay, let's play combat. And it's almost unfair how good or how much better you can be. If you live in Germany, you're good at combat, or if you're a juggler from Germany, you're probably good at combat, and Berlin is where the good combat players are. Yeah, and it can be a little bit unfair. And what I really liked about this is because, and I said before, it's like, well, that's not fair, because these guys are obviously way overmatched. And then you realize, oh, that's why that battle isn't, you know, the big space battles isn't the thing that's going to be the main driving, the main driver of tension well, not so much tension, but conflict. You know, the conflict isn't about the war. There's, like I say, all these other layers going on. And in the end, the conflict itself is a way to let Cordelia and Vorkosigan kind of get to know each other better. What else do I have here? Yeah, so the reading. It's Grosvenor Gardner, very good reader. He doesn't actually do any voices, which is very good, because a lot of this is told from the point of view of a female character, and it could have been a lot of like, oh, he could have gone trying to do the falsetto voice or the female voice, and thankfully he didn't do any of that. Everyone just speaks, and it could have been a problem, but it wasn't. It was all actually very clear and very easy to understand. The writing itself was good, because, like I say, there's quite clever tricks and some quite beautiful writing in places. However, there is sort of like the whole show don't tell. She got the show don't tell down very well. But it's like this book was the it's like the textbook example of using weird adverbs, you know, the whole Riley and all that kind of, he said this, Riley, and you're like, well, what, how would you say that, Riley? What does that even mean? And it's, and it's, you can get away with it. And I must admit, this book does get away with it. If this was like a if there was other, lots of other writing things which kind of clashed with my sensibilities, this would just be one of them, and it would bring the book down. But I think because there's so much else to like about this book, it gets away with it. But like, the rule is there for a reason. The whole "don't use too many adverbs" rule is there for a reason, because like, if you use an adverb which doesn't makes sense or isn't logical, it makes me just stop and go, wait, what? Like that conjured up an image in my mind which is either like nonsensical or is logically impossible. And I wrote some of these down as I went through. This is not all of them, but as they came up, because I was listening on my iPhone, I made an iPhone. So someone did something hulkingly. This is only like in the second half of the book when I started making notes, and this isn't all of them. It's just the ones that stuck out to me. Sighed shakily. How do you sigh shakily? Do you sigh and your body shakes, or is it sighing shakily? Is that shaky sigh, or you sigh anyway? Grind screamingly. Did something unstoppably. Did something tonelessly. Oh, this is a good one. Whistled soundlessly. And I was like, okay, how do you whistle soundlessly? This is a whistle, and this is a soundless whistle. No, I made a sound by accident. This is a soundless whistle. And I'm thinking, whistling soundlessly is breathing. That's what breathing is, isn't it? That's whistling soundlessly. Someone's heart began to pound lumpishly. I'm like, pound? How does a heart pound lumpishly? Later, a heart pounded drunkenly. And I'm like, okay, heart pounding drunkenly. I can kind of understand that, because it's like, ba-doom. But I'm thinking, but does drunkenly mean like out of order or something like that? He said something frozenly. How do you say something frozenly? I'm not quite sure. Stared meditatively at his hands, which I thought was meditatively at his hands, but okay, fair enough. It's just a bit clunky. Heart pounded drunkenly. I didn't that way. He rested his hand on his weapon caressingly. Caressingly. To caress is an action, and resting is another action. Resting and caressing, in my, I don't know, is it just me? In my brain, they're two kind of like mutually not, you can't do them both at the same time. Caressing and resting. You can rest your hand on something, or you can use your hand to caress something, but resting caressingly, I don't know, it just kind of hurts my brain a bit. Fastened them straightly, and of course smiled wryly was one of the last ones there as well. Again, some of these things might make sense, but every time I hear them, and then I have to, like, I almost have to, like, press pause, not to note them down, but on this little, note here on my iPhone, but, like, it gets in the way of me, it just gets in the way of me understanding what's going in the book. Yeah, otherwise, something about viewpoints here as well. Most of this is told from Cordelia's viewpoint, and then sometimes it seemed to switch to Vorkosigan, but then after a while I realised, oh, it's actually, instead of, we're not being told what he's thinking, we're being told what Cordelia thinks Vorkosigan is thinking via her looking at him, and then he say something, and then, and again, it just wasn't always clear what was going on, and if we were actually inside of Vorkosigan's head, or if we were getting that information secondhand. Yeah, at this spot of the podcast, I'm going to do the Audible ad, so if you want to, you can read this book for free, or listen to this book, audiobook for free. Grover Gardner is a fantastic narrator, and this is a good book, so check out audibletrial.com/sfbrp. If you don't want this book, you can choose from 100,000 other titles, audiobook titles, and the way it works is that you sign up for a free trial, and at the end of the month, you should have finished this book, but at the end of the month, you can continue with a trial. You can sign up for a gold account or a Platinum account, and that gives you either one Audible credit or the audiobook a month or two. And I do actually suggest a book like this, which is, you know, it's the start of a series or something like that, and it's a great way to get into it, because then if you're ever not really sure what you're going to do for your next credit, you can just go, I'll just go the next book in the series. And this is a good length for an audiobook, around about 8 or 9 hours is a good way to get into it, because, you know, you start a book and it's going to be 28 hours long, you're like, well, I'm getting my value for money here, but sometimes it can be a little bit imposing to get through these kind of things. So yeah, help out the SFBRP. You signing up for this actually helps fund my own Audible and my own reading and book buying and hosting and things like that, which just helps out the podcast in a handy way. So check out audibletrial.com/SFBRP. SFBRP, you know the initials. So finally, talking about the ideas in the book and the themes and all that kind of stuff. And the one thing that really, really stuck out to me the most, I mean, there's lots of stuff going on here, but all of the different ideas, all of the different things in the book come down to the impact of actions, the impact of the decisions that people make and if they decide to carry them out. And this is like almost the opposite of Falling Free, the first book chronologically, or the first book that I read, because in there it's sort of like, hey, we're going to do this, well, it doesn't really matter, well, let's do this, hey, what's going to happen, well, I'll do this as long as my wife can come along, oh, that's great, what's going to happen here, oh, everything's going to trouble, well, this person might kind of break their ankle and that's going to be the worst thing that happens, oh, what about, is anyone going to die, no, probably nobody's going to die by the end of it, and there's going to be this action, but actually everything's going to come through in the end, and in the end you've got this very kind of cozy revolution and everyone gets away and it's like la 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 la, and we're going, and it's like even the things like the technological changes in the world have their, you know, ramifications, but they're good in the end and it all works out, yeah, la la la. But in this book it's like the polar opposite, and it feels even strange that both of these books were written by the same person, because they like treat all of the different subjects in almost exactly the opposite ways. In here it's sort of like, okay, you got the wider world, like everything that happens in the book has an impact on minor characters and, you know, other characters and, you know, the political things that go across. And this is actually kind of maybe slightly heavy-handedly when in the idea of the politics, because in Beta, Colony is a democracy and there's a president. And it's funny that every time anyone mentions the president, it's like, well, what about it? It's like, oh, well, I didn't vote for him. And then someone else is like, well, I didn't vote for him. Oh, he can do what he wants. I didn't vote for him. And it's funny, like, no, you never meet anybody in this book who actually voted for the president. And again, you just think, well, okay, that's interesting. But that's just part of like this wider theme of like, okay, your decisions have, you know, like what you decide, even though these people didn't vote for the president, I know he's still around and getting in the way sometimes, I guess. But yeah, and of course, in war, there's a lot of this. You know, the idea being that you know, every piece of you know, every action, lots of people die, and it weighs very heavily. You know, it turns, you know, all the post-traumatic stress. And so many times in these books, you go, well, war is great, or it's not great. It's like, oh, well, thousands of people are going to die here, but this person got the promotion, and that's all that matters. And in this book, it's like, well, thousands of people died here, and the guy who was in charge rejected his promotion. The other person was going to get a medal, and they didn't want it. They went through massive post-traumatic stress, and in the end, turned to drugs and religion. And you're like, yay! And you're like, well, that's actually what war is like. And you're like, no, but I want medals in the end and happy endings. And it's like, no, you're probably going to be massive post-traumatic stress, and you've got to do this. And all these different political schemings has the same thing. And a big one idea which I haven't mentioned so far is there's, you know, in because of the rapey action that goes on, it's not, you know, it's not portrayed on screen so much, let me put it that way, but it is referenced a few times. And after this war, all the prisoners of war who had been raped and with and who have conceived, you know, these rape pregnancies, they actually again, I don't want to give it too much away, but it deals with this issue in a way which is actually, again, like, okay, you have to deal with this. You guys who did this, your actions have consequences, and the consequences are not what you expect, and you're gonna have to live with them. And that's great, because it's always like, hey, remember this happened earlier? Well, guess what? Now you've got to deal with it. And you remember this thing that also happened earlier? Well, guess what? You've got to deal with it. For example, at the beginning, you've got this young character who is with Cordelia, and they go in, and he gets hit by this disruptor, and it's like, and Volkozagon is like, well, we should just get rid of him. We should just use the knife and kill him. And Cordelia is like, no, look, this happened. We have to live with it. We have to deal with this. You know, there's going to be fallout from this. And there's like 4, 5, or 6 different characters throughout this. It's like, hey, remember what you did back here? Well, guess what? This person, He's in hospital still. Now go and talk to that guy who's in hospital, and he's in hospital because you wanted to do this. Hey, and this guy over here, well, he's totally fucked up, and he's probably going to be in a mental institution for the rest of his life. But guess what? He's going to be important later on. You know why he's going to be important later on? Because you fucked him over earlier on. And like the epilogue in this book, again, it's the same kind of thing. You know that big battle that before, you know, and these two characters, and there was this whole love story. You know what the price that they paid for that? You've got this person going out here and collecting dead bodies, and there's other stuff that goes on there too. And you're like, well, guess what? There's the red shirts exist, and this is a world where red shirts exist. And this is like, in, you know, in, even like Red Shirts, the book by John Scalzi, had all of these, you know, these epilogues that are after it, and it's like, yeah, they're red shirts, and we've got to look after them. This is like Red Shirts, but, like, executed a million times better, because the actions do have consequences, and the main characters have to live with those consequences in a way which actually feels real and is actually meaningful and isn't just a joke. It's not just a throwaway line. It's like, oh, Red Shirts, well, you know, these guys, they have lives too, you know? And then it turns out, well, do they? No, it's just a whole silly thing. And here, all of these actions have consequences. And this isn't, again, this is all happening in the background with all these different layers in the world and the politics and the war and the rape and schemings and all these other kind of things. But the other thing that's most remarkable about this book, I think, is that this plays out on this smaller scale, and you realize, and I mentioned this before, that you realize that everything that Cordelia does makes Vorkosigan fall in love with her a little bit more. And then all of these little things that Vorkosigan does, you realize that, you know, it's having the same effect back again. And this is never, like, stated explicitly, but you have to read the growing understanding of these two characters. One is from Beta Colony, one is, you know, this weird odd couple thing going on here, but they slowly learn about each other. And yet there's these other layers going on behind there. Like, they both tell a story. It's like, well, in our culture, we have arranged marriages, and this happens, and this happens, and this happens, and arranged marriages is good because, you know, when you're young and you're 18 years old and you're stupid, you don't really know what love is like, and you do stupid stuff. And, you know, Vorkosigan tells a story about a young guy who was stupid, and you're like, okay, this is a good story, but who's Vorkosigan in this story? Is he this guy in this story, or is he that guy in this story? And then he tells us, and then this other thing comes out, and it's like, wait a second, did he fall in love with a man? Or, like, it's like this weird thing, well, did this fit? And then later on, he's like, oh yeah, and here's a picture that Vorkosigan drew of, and all of these pictures of his previous lover who's a woman, and then this other one these other pictures of this other previous lover who's a woman, and then here's a picture of a guy, and you're like, wait a second, that was this other guy, and you realize, oh, maybe that's the thing, the main tension between the two, and it's just in this little scene of this one thing where she's looking through this little album, a sketchbook of stuff that of Vorkosigan, and when Vorkosigan, like, fell out with this other guy, he gave up sketching, and I'm realizing, wow, that's Vorkosigan's backstory there, and you've got to piece it together by these little mentions about her looking through a scrapbook of his, and you realize that's the depth of the characters, that you realize that they can not so much fall in love so quickly, but understand the depth of each other and be drawn to each other in some ways, like, within the book very, very quickly, but also over the course of the book quite slowly coming to that realization. And also, as I said before, these actions and reactions and impacts of actions happen within the relationship, but also, like I say, these backstories that, oh yeah, and I forgot to mention Cordelia, she tells a story of how love stories can end up ending tragically in her civilization or in a Beta Colony, and you're like, well, okay, well, who is she in this story? And it's a little bit more obvious. The complexity of Vorkosigan's backstory, like I say, some of the impacts of that you don't realize until she's looking through the sketchbook, and you're like, oh, this scene that happened in the second part of the book, now that makes a little bit more sense, or it could make more sense. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. But there's this, again, in the first part of this book, one of these little things is that Vokosigan goes, oh, I'm going to give you your stunner back. And you're like, well, is this tactical? Is he just trying to be a good commander? Is he just trying to get her on his side? And then someone has tears in their eyes, and it's such a clever line. It's like, oh, you don't have tears in your eyes for someone who's alive. You have tears in your eyes for someone who's died. And just these little bits there, and you go, ah, this is why when he asks her to marry him for the first time, it kind of comes out of nowhere. But as soon as it comes out of nowhere, you're like, that did not come out of nowhere. That came out of, like, even though we're only like an hour into this audiobook, that came out of a very deep understanding of each other that they managed to get to at this point of the book. So in the end, I really, really enjoyed this book. And again, it surprised me. I know it's a bit weird to say, hey, the most recommended book that most people have recommended to me that I haven't got around to listening to yet, or reading yet as an audio reading or listening to. This is the book. And should I be surprised that I really enjoyed this and thought it was really good? I don't think I should be. Certainly a lot better than Falling Free, and so I understand why people say you should start with this book or start with one of the non-Falling Free book in this Vokosigan saga, but I really, really enjoyed this book. I'm going to give it 4 stars. It does. I think the plotting is slightly, I wouldn't say weak, but it's a bit... I wouldn't say it's cleanly plotted, because it does definitely feel like, hey, this is either like 3 short stories that fit together, but they're not short, they're not self-contained because it is all one story. But then I'm thinking there's a lot more going on here, and a lot of these other characters that you either need to do more with these other characters or you need to do less with these other characters. Otherwise it feels a bit heavy-handed. Unless there's another half to this novel, and I know there is another half to this novel, so as a standalone novel, I'm going to give it 4 stars. I think maybe if I carry on with the Barriere, those two books together, which have actually been, like I said before, they've been published together, maybe those two would make a lot more sense. Hopefully, as I continue this series, which I'm certainly going to do, I'll be able to keep reviewing them in a non-spoiler fashion, even though I think quite a lot of these books kind of spoil, well, not spoil them, but it's sort of like, hey, here's a book about Miles Vorkosigan's parents and how they met. And I'm like, great, well, thanks for that blurb. Let's do this thing. So I'm going to give this book 4 stars. And again, it continues my recent streak of reading books and rating them very highly. I've enjoyed most of my readings. I've got to go back quite a long way before I get to a 2-star book or a 1.5 star book or any great rant. I guess Tilting the Balance, which I just reviewed at the end of the previous podcast, I guess that would be a 2-star book. But yeah, I'm actually really enjoying reading a lot of books, which are good, which I'm giving high ratings to. And also, I must admit, it's because if I start a book which I'm not enjoying, I just stop it. There's Existence by David Brin. I really enjoyed The Kiln People by him, and I got Existence at roughly about the same time. And I've not got past the first about 4 hours of this massive long audiobook, and I just don't think I ever will. So if I ever finish that, that could be rant-worthy, or it could just be disappointing and just like, just didn't like it. But I'm probably never going to get round to doing a full review of it if I never finish it. So that's about it. Oh, I was, again, let's check it out. I've got the Goodreads.com page open here for Shards of Honor. 3.73 on average of friends' reviews, which is pretty much SFBRP listeners, because pretty much only SFBRP listeners are my friends here. Generally, lots of 3 stars, quite a lot of 4 stars, and a number of 5 stars here. Joel did a... this is a... No, Tudor says, 4 stars, good, solid stuff. I'm beginning to understand why this Vokosigan saga is so popular. My next read, Barriere, and the same here as well. And Joel rated it 3 stars, with actually quite a long review. I'll just read this first paragraph, which stands out here. He goes, what happened? What are these sensible, mature adults doing in the middle of my space opera? Where are the hot-headed, brash heroes? Where is the sass-mouthed young princess? Where are the robots and aliens? This is not your father's science fiction, but it might be your mother's. You know, because it's about the romance. So, yeah, he gives it 3 stars. I'll give it 4 stars. And the Goodreads... average is 4.18 stars there. So, yeah, pretty highly regarded. I definitely do recommend it. You can check out what I think about other science fiction series. There's actually I did a whole podcast talking about science fiction series, although it was quite a long time ago. Let me actually see if I can find this one. Number episode number 46, which is many years ago that I did this. I did a review, not a review, but I did a podcast just about many science fiction series where I talked through all of the science, different science fiction series that I had read or not read and what I thought about the ones I'd read and if I'd recommend them. Yeah, so you could probably check that out. Maybe I mentioned this in that podcast, I don't know, but this is certainly a series to think about. Otherwise, you can check out, go to sfbrp.com and click on the episode lists. Every single episode that I've done is mentioned there. I was listed there in many ways. I mentioned that because so if you go to, you know, if you check out the RSS feed, some of the oldest episodes are now falling off the end of the RSS feed, so you can't get them just by clicking in iTunes, download this episode. You've actually got to go and check out the blog post, but they're all mentioned there on the episode list. Yeah, check me out on goodreads.com, become a SFBRP listener group member and chat with other people. I'm sure there's a thread there, discussion thread there about the Vorkosigan saga, so you can check out that and see what other SFBRP listeners think about it. Follow me on Twitter, I'm at Luke Burge. Otherwise, email me, luke@juggler.net. I reply to every email that I get. Otherwise, I think I'm all caught up with the reviews, except for the Solaris review, which me and Juliana will do. My second Solaris episode, the first one with me and Juliana, we're going to talk about lots of movies and audiobooks and different translations. We'll get to that when I get home in a few days' time. Otherwise, that's it from me, and I'll catch you next time.